Thank you so much, AgriTech Campus, for hosting us today. It's been incredible. Thank you, Chris and Olga, if she's here. Not yet. There she is. She's coming in. Thank you, Chris and Olga, for our tour today. We got swag, so that's cool. but we have to do this again. Maybe we do it when the apple trees are in bloom. I don't know. So, yeah, so when they're fruiting, even better. So welcome to our faculty forum on the AgriTech campus. Chelsea and I are going to pose three questions. And I don't have them with me, so I will get them. But we released on Monday a Qualtrics thinking about how to build up a sense of community, a sense of support for each other. As I mentioned in the Senate last month, with federal funds freezing, this is directly impacting faculty life. And we take a moment to think about our colleagues that are directly impacted. And places like AgriTech have a lot of research and extension faculty who are on soft money positions. This is a very poignant and real moment for a lot of our colleagues. So thank you all for having us here. And the three questions are, I will take them all. And this is something that I'm going to just put in the Monday message for till the end of the year. I want people to keep thinking about this. One, what are the most pressing challenges you face as a faculty member in the current environment? Two, and this is why I wanted to do this here, what opportunities do you see for collaboration and collective action amongst the faculty? And three, how can the Office of the Dean of Faculty and the Faculty Senate support you and your colleagues? And I would love to start the conversation. This is our first time to have sort of the in-person version of this. And then I will share these comments from today, but also whatever comments are in the Qualtrics, I'll make a webpage and we'll just start building, but just trying to get that sense of community and collaboration. And I think we're gonna switch over to another mic, if I'm correct.
You can go ahead okay. And sit down. Oh, yeah, on the camera. So for you guys online, I just posted those questions in the chat, and I'm going to try to pull them up here so that we can see them. And I'm also going to move the camera so that you can see everybody in the room rather than looking at the presenter.
Just let people know this is a discussion.
Yeah. So for those of you online, everyone in the room, you can see now the room is filled with a bunch of fantastically excited people. It's a beautiful day up here in Geneva. Everyone at the tables, please use your microphones, both just to be able to hear the room and then also so that those on Zoom can hear you. I'll manage the Zoom scene so that if you want to raise your hands on Zoom, please do so, and we'll bring in your conversation. If nobody's paying attention to you or you feel like you're not being heard, just unmute yourself and start, if for some reason you're not being seen, but I'm going to try to monitor that. And then, with so many people here, this is fantastic. Everyone on Zoom, we're lucky because we get to see their names, but we don't all necessarily get to see each other. So just state your name and your affiliation, and anything else you want to share about, your position. Whether it's what you work on or who you work with or what departments you're part of, as a way to engage us in the conversation. So just please make sure you introduce yourself as you're speaking. And again, thank you all for being here and for hosting the Faculty Senate. We hear it's our first time coming up to AgriTech, and now I think there's a commitment to do it more often in all seasons. So I'm just going to start it by, again, there's the three questions. What are the most pressing challenges you face? And when we say as a faculty, it's as an individual, but also as a community of individuals. You're doing research, you're doing extension, you're doing teaching. What are some of the most pressing challenges that you face in this current environment? What opportunities do you see for collaboration and collective action? We're really thinking about like outside the box. I know like I don't know. Everybody, you know, there's this whole time when you're sitting there and you're kind of doom scrolling and you can kind of doom scroll like forever right now. But then there's these moments where you realize like, wait, this is time for collective action because of this pressure over here, this other thing can explode and create something new and novel and beautiful. So like looking for those opportunities, and then how can the Dean of Faculty Office, the Faculty Senate, how can we leverage this community and this collective power to really make a difference and to further these initiatives, to further these ideas, and to raise your voices?
I guess I can start with some very local.
It is on. It should be on. The mics at the table might need to be turned on.
Testing one. Okay, it's on now. Bill Catt, molecular medicine at the vet school. And I suppose we'll start with some low-hanging fruit. Research funding is obviously an incredible challenge right now. It's been a challenge for a very long time, but even what funding people could get, those sources are drying up day by day and getting clawed back. And I don't know what we collectively do about that, but maybe it's the elephant in the room to some extent.
Hi, I'm Katie Gold. I'm an assistant professor of grape pathology here at AgriTech. When I think about the most pressing challenge, I think about my field program. So many of us here at AgriTech, particularly those who work with perennials, but not exclusively, are stewards of resources that have existed prior to us that we hope will exist beyond us. And we also employ, as mentioned earlier, really critically important colleagues on soft money. So I'm most concerned about my ability to ensure and like steward the resource that I've been entrusted. I have almost 10 acres of pathology vineyards, as well as the employees who trust me as their, you know, manager, supervisor, and source of income.
Hello, I'm Nathan Matias, assistant professor in the Department of Communication. I do a lot of research both on like public engagement around science, and as do my colleagues, as well as research on threats and risks to scientists from harassment and other kinds of things. And I think there are several layers to what I'm concerned about. The first is that this kind of work has been targeted for years now. And it's, you know, from climate science all to the particular moment we're in. And just last Friday, for example, people from across my area had a vast number of NSFs cut if they did any work related to misinformation in any way. You can read about it in the New York Times. I understand there are a number of grants here at Cornell. And it's not just funding cuts. Researchers are being targeted for online hate mobs and also hauled in front of Congress. And so one of the things I think about as a researcher and organizer working on this is how to support the resilience of folks who are doing science communication research and how to protect my graduate students who, at this point, any project we do together, we have to do a threat modeling so that before they publish research, they're prepared if they're pilloried, targeted. And in fact, some of my students have been written about negatively in the press merely for doing research on this communication of science. And so that's a risk that I know others here at Cornell face too.
Hi, I'm Courtney Weber, the chair of the horticulture department section in the School of Integrated Plant Science. On the flip side of the grant funding is drying up, our costs keep rising. And so as a collective message, find ways to reduce that increase. I know costs go up, everybody's costs go up, but sometimes it seems like they go up faster. They certainly go up faster than the money we can bring in. And so we have field heavy projects like Katie's. Maintaining those facilities are very expensive, and we don't have opportunities often to find money to do that. And so we are often scrambling for maintaining those kinds of facilities. They've done a really great job in recent years here upgrading some of our infrastructure. I mean, the fencing and some of the road building, those types of things aren't very attractive to outside supporters, but they're so critical for what we do in maintaining these long-term projects. And I don't think the message gets out that these long-term projects, you don't get the benefit until the long-term is passed. So if you stop halfway, you've just thrown it all away because the results come at the end. And so finding ways to support those kinds of research. And there's obviously other areas at the university have long-term research that need those same kind of support.
Steve Reiners in horticulture, and I just wanted to follow up a little bit with what Courtney's saying, especially for the first question up there. There's a lot that we can't control that's coming down from the federal government. There's a lot that comes from the state that we can't control. I can't control how much my growers are going to raise in any particular year to help fund my research. But one thing that is bothersome is it just seems like we keep getting directives from the college, which we should be able to control. And Courtney touched on some of this before, where our costs keep going up. Whenever we replace something, whether it's travel, whether it's grant, following grants or something like that, we always seem to replace it with something that's much more cumbersome and harder to work with, but to the point where it's not even worth trying to put in Concur for travel because it's just such a nightmare compared to the system that we used to have. My costs, I do a lot with summer help because I do a lot of field work. Suddenly my hourly cost for a summer helper goes from $16 an hour up to $20 per hour. And again, we're not budgeting for that. I'm going to be paying a 16-year-old kid working his first job. He's going to be making $20 per hour. How do I reconcile that with the people that have been in my program for 5 years that I was bringing up and were making more? So there's just always it just seems like there's always something coming down from Cornell that results in more of our time spent doing it, more of our money going towards it, product testing agreements. I bring in $10,000 on a product testing agreement, and after everything is paid out of it, I've got $1,000 left. So let's work on the things we can control, maybe. I mean, and it's getting worse all the time.
Hi, Maddie Aravik, the new grape breeder in the horticulture section, assistant professor in horticulture. So a concern, like a pressing concern right now, is as the field season is coming, hiring to help. I similarly inherited a wealth of germplasm that is over 10 acres of vineyards that need care. Oh, sorry, of plants, important plants that are, part of the long-term breeding program, are also mapping populations that I will be able to use to hopefully find new important genetics, basically that are important for both research, for breeding, for training graduate students, because it's the resources we have in the ground to do the research now. But if they're not maintained properly in this short time right now, it impacts year after year after year beyond that. And I can't get students hired for the summer starting in May to do that. That's a problem. So hiring immediately is a pressing concern. I will then transition to saying I'm also concerned with the tenure evaluation. I am pre-tenure, I've just started. I'm supposed to be on this upward ramp of building a research program, building the extension program. And if I can't hire people, if I can't use my federal dollars that I do have, there are no federal dollars to get beyond those. Those grants are gonna time out. And yeah, so I guess, yeah, the restrictions again coming from the university or college or whatever level that are restricting our use of the funds we do have. And I was told I can't even put it on my startup, these new positions, because I have already hired, but I need more than one person. So the restrictions on hiring is a big problem. And the restrictions on using our funds we do have is a problem. And then the tenure review is concerning just in terms of how we're going to be evaluated, because I've grown up in this academic system where we all expect we're going to be able to get these grant dollars to support our work. And that's what I'm going to be judged on. And I understand the messaging is that it's all taken in context, but it's hard to trust and it's hard to know, you know, what the new standards are. And yeah. Thank you.
Yes, of course. I just want to share that everything that is contributed today be shared with the provost and president and all the deans. So opportunity to give faculty feedback on how to contextualize the pressures that everyone's feeling and everything you just described. Those are very real. Those aren't just anxieties. Those are very real concerns and very concrete concerns. I think, yes, I want us to articulate those, but I also, are there opportunities to spin this up a little bit, but are there also opportunities where we can collaborate, share infrastructures, staff? I don't know. But just if there are other ideas like that as well, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I will say my colleagues, my fellow grape research colleagues, we have been doing everything we can to share resources and share people, but we all have a lot of work. Yeah, and fewer people is fewer. Yeah, we're doing that. And so that, yes, we're trying.
Bill Cadigan. So, you know, slightly different topic. One of the things we saw during the tour today is all the incredible work Geneva is doing with various outside companies. And we heard about how there's been a distinct attack on expertise and academia, generally speaking. You know, people still, they trust their favorite brands. I wonder if we can't somehow leverage that to, like, you know, get Mott's to issue a press release about the incredible work they did developing applesauce at Cornell Geneva campus. Or something like that. And we've got similar collaborations going on the Ithaca campus and the New York City campus, and find some way to use the power of all these people that we're helping every day and maybe get them to help us a little bit in return, just in terms of you know, public relations.
I can.
So we are doing some of that. One of the things that we're doing in CALS here at Agritech and expanding into CALS is that we've partnered with farmers, apple farmer, cabbage farmer, grape farmer across the state to write stories. Actually, the first story was on beets and how Cornell partnered with several different beets, you know, Love Beets and you know, names that people have heard. And how that enabled New York State to be the number one producer of table beets. And so some of those stories are coming out, but I agree with you that finding ways to promote the work that across Cornell that we're doing to benefit society without coming across as self-promoting is I think really important to do. So yeah, I think finding more opportunities to do that would be really great.
Actually, you know, that last conversation, Chelsea, reminds me, so I work in dairy, and historically the university did not want industry money sunk into our research dairy. And now we have a farm of the future that looks very much like the farm of the past. So I think it would be nice for us to maybe more openly celebrate these industry partners and partner with them in real investment in some of our infrastructure. And I think that is happening in some places and some campuses, but I don't think it's really been a Cales-wide effort.
There we go. Jason, to that point, I don't have my notes with me, but I could swear I heard this yesterday that, and I believe it came from the voice of Gary Koretsky. Okay. I don't want to negatively or positively attribute anything to the wrong person, but Gary Koretsky has been brought into the Vice Provost for Research office, and one of his tasks is specifically to change the way in which Cornell operates with industry. And part of this, well, I know everybody's like breathing this sigh of like, oh my thing. So this is, again, this could be one of those like aha moments when we realize that part of the reason that we have these complicated relationships with industry is because of our relationship with the federal government. And in order to maintain that relationship with the federal government, we had to jump through particular hoops that didn't cause us to be in conflict when taking money from industries. But if we are no longer partnering with the federal government in the same way we were before, or in any way, then that does remove some of those barriers and some of those strongholds as to where and how and we can engage with companies. And so actually what you have here at Agritech is a wealth of knowledge as to how to make it work already. And so bringing those voices into Gary Koretsky and into that space, be like, we've already been doing this under circumstances where we had to kind of like navigate. But what we've learned from this is you need to say this and don't say this. And by the way, this is an important aspect to bring in. And oh, don't forget, you need to have this clause, right? All of those things are going to be really critical as we try to rapidly and effectively create space to have effective collaborations with industry. So, I mean, this might be a great offering of Cornell Tech to have that knowledge.
And I can say on May 13th from 2 to 3:30, there's a panel, a webinar on how to diversify your research portfolio, looking at foundations, private industry. Maybe someone from this campus should be on that panel. And so if you think that's appropriate, let me know and I will share that with the Vice Provost of Research and Innovation.
Great. And I think they're going to do several of these, and one is going to be on industry, one is going to be on NGOs, there's going to be a couple of different ones. And so anyone who's interested, write to the office and we can tap you into that, right? The right framework and make sure that you get those announcements as well as be considered to be experts in those frameworks and systems. And I know this is something that also Cornell Atkinson has been involved with a lot of some industry and so they're also in that conversation as well. And I know there's been collaboration between Agritech and Atkinson in some ways. So yeah, again, that's a wide open space that I think we need to start blowing up in a good way. Blow up, like make bigger, as opposed to blow up as, you know, anyway, it's one of those complicated terms.
All right. That's fun. Okay. Yeah. So Thomas Bjorkman, former senator from horticulture section. So one of the things that stresses faculty is a lack of agency, all these things that we don't understand but are very threatening coming at us. And largely the advice is don't say anything stupid, let us take care of it, right? That's what we hear. which is probably good advice, but it doesn't give us any agency on what to do. And so having something that, that we can do or be prepared to do would be very helpful. For instance, one thing that I think of, if you get an email or a tweet or whatever it is that says stop work, and as far as you can tell, it's an illegal order because you have a contract and it's all legal and you should continue your work. What information should we take down in case this thing goes to court so that we can document this person said exactly this thing and that is not legal? So that obviously we're not going to do it, but if the university or some other organization starts a legal proceeding, how can we be the most helpful in having the right data for them to use?
So the very first step you get, if you get such an email, is to write to the interim vice provost of research and innovation, because they've created templates. And the very first step they want is for PIs to appeal. If that doesn't go well, then the university appeals. And if the university doesn't do well, then they will litigate. So that is, there is a plan in place. They are trying to disseminate the plan as best as possible. But one of the things that they have asked for us to do as a faculty is to maintain our relationships with our program officers, because many times the program officers are 100% on our side. This is not what they want either. And so to not lose that relationship because of and let them do the ugly, litigation work. But yes, that
I think that's a great example of where you can play a valuable role as a faculty member, knowing that you're part of a bigger structure that seems to know what it's doing and is potentially effective. So good.
We have, I'm going to try to put the links in the chat and then make sure you all get them too. I can send them around something, but just recently the, in the presentations in the last couple of days, they have links to the different websites. So as soon as you get, if you get one of those letters, there's links and you can actually go on and read them and even think about ways that you can plan ahead or whatever. So it's really helpful. So I will put those in the chat and then kind of try to figure out a way to pass those around. I have to find them first, so I'm looking.
I hate to call on people, but Matthias, if you wouldn't mind sharing Danielle Allen's perspective and what your colleagues in communication are thinking.
Does this one work? Hooray. So I'll say a couple things. I see Drew Margolin maybe in the room as well, so on Zoom. So if he is, maybe he can follow up a little. I think there are a few layers, right? And some of those are things that we can do as an institution. And some of those are things that we can do collectively. And I'll get to Danielle's idea in a moment. I'm the founder of an organization called the Coalition for Independent Tech Research, and we fight for academics who are at risk. And one of the reasons we have an independent legal entity is because where it's politically complicated for larger institutions to take action. I had a conversation in November with a member of the former administration who urged us to think about how much universities have to lose and how circumspect they sometimes have to be about which fights to enter into. And so this is a moment where medium and small sized groups of people can actually move with greater rapidity and take on risks that larger institutions that we might ordinarily think are have heft and weight and resources might be slower to wade into. So as we think about what to ask of the university, it's helpful to ask, Like, what are those mid-sized organizations that we are part of or communities that can move faster and take on other risks? And so for folks who do technology research, that's something that the coalition is already organizing. People who do misinformation research, resources, there's also other organizations like the Knight First Amendment Institute that I'm connected to at Columbia and other legal resources. So at moments when you feel like you're not sure where the boundary is with the institution, talking to the institution, asking where can you help, and then asking others as well is a good idea. There are things that the institution can do. And one idea that I know a few people in our department have been talking about with CALS is this idea of enlisting the public, not just to say, hey, we're here to remind you how great we are, but to remind the public that actually we have a long-standing reciprocity. Danielle Allen over at Harvard, a philosopher, wrote this beautiful idea of universities reaching out to say thanks, right? To remind people how much we appreciate the support of the public and all the things that we've done together in a way that isn't just trying to pitch how great we are, kind of activating that reciprocity that we already have. And that's totally true of Cornell across the state. I know Drew has been involved in a number of informal collective support actions, especially for students who are having their visas revoked. And so I don't know if Drew, you're here and able to share some of the other things faculty are doing.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. I think you articulated the basic principles really well, which is this is a time when...
I've been pulled on a second. I'm going to try to increase the volume.
We're going to try to see if we can get the volume up on you. Could you speak again, Drew?
Sometimes my microphone is also not that strong. You hear me
okay,
better
now? Okay, if you could be close to it, I think that would help.
Yeah. Okay. Is that better?
Can everyone hear him? Yep. Okay, just speak strongly.
Yeah, so... Thanks, Nathan. I think you articulated the basic idea really well. This is a time when we're under attack, partly for cynical reasons, but partly because it's convenient to kind of paint academics as kind of elite ivory tower, you know, not engaged with public concerns. We know that that's not true, but we need to find ways to get that message out there, which we were talking about. But also show how we also help each other, how we're not just sort of like a regular, you know, corporation that just only, you know, goes where the money goes. So I'm part of a grassroots organization called See You Out Loud. They just sort of started. They had a protest some of you may have been at on last Thursday. And we're just looking for ways that we can help each other, whether that is this idea that I had about faculty voluntarily sort of donating like their discretionary funds towards other faculty. If they're not using them, maybe someone else needs them. Or this effort that Nathan mentioned where there are some international students who are really in a bind right now because at any minute their visa can be canceled. They might be forced to leave the country. They can't afford to do so, or their payments are now stopped. They can't get any other job. And so we're just raising money through a GoFundMe. And all these things have a, you know, a short-term benefit, but also we're trying to build sort of internal community and trust with each other, because I think it's something that it's not just to the point that was raised that the administration just has to kind of go out there and do everything. I think we need to also, you know, show everyone that we care for each other and that these principles are part of how we live as Cornellians, not just, you know, that we do it for the money, so to speak.
Thank you, Drew. I just also want to share that when the Trump administration writes these letters, these letters to universities to have oversight on academic programming, et cetera, one of the things that is carved out is the academic freedom of the faculty. And I think that that is one that was striking to me, that they knew well enough to do so. And that's something that we can all lean into as a resource, I believe. And Olga, did you want to say something?
Hello. Olga Padilla-Sacor from Food Science. I think that the idea that Cornell can really be more aggressive to working with companies is very important with the industry. And we have had a struggle with 4 years with this issue because we know, you very well said it, we know how to work with companies, but the process is arduous and is very frustrating, to say the least. And at the end, sometimes we don't know if it's worth the effort. So there are so many layers, and I think that if we're going to do this well, it has to start from scratch and not try to fix systems that do not work, as we have already seen. Every time they put a new system, I just wait a couple of months to see if the system is going to stay up, because it is really time consuming and it's a wasteful system for us. So I think we really have to start from looking at other universities have done this well. I know Europe works much better with companies. They always get a lot more contracts. So why are we trying to invent the wheel again? We look at some of our peer universities that are doing this well, and they have streamlined processes to work really to be able to get those contracts with industry and to work together. I'm really concerned with our colleagues that are not citizens, because they even afraid of traveling because they don't know they can be back into the country. I think that is something that it is, you know, shocking that at this time that is happening, but it is the reality of many of our colleagues and students and technicians and faculty and staff. So I think we should be trying to provide as much support as possible, but also we feel like, what can we do if it's not in our hands, right? You are at the mercy of this person that will decide your future in you know, 2 minutes. So I think that there's a lot of stress overall in how do we support each other. I like that you said, if you have extra money, give it to the people that are right now struggling because they are starting or because situations are tough. And I know this is contrary to what we have been basically taught all the time. You know, I have been here 28 years saving money to make sure that there's always something for rainy days. Well, this is tremendous days, not really rainy days. So I think we should be opening up to what are the options and to be very generous to support each other. So those are my 2 cents.
That was more than 2 cents. Thank you. I can say that every part of the Cornell community can go and have a consultation with Miller Mayer, which is a company and an immigration law firm in Ithaca. And the Vice Provost of International Affairs is trying to stay as current as possible on the Immigration Services website. And unfortunately, the relationship between the individual and the government is the immigration law. I hear sighs, yes. So it is at this time, obviously, we are all dealing with very, very real pressures. But I think what I've been hoping we can do, and it's, I'm not sure what the path is yet, but having in-person conversations with each other, as it's a colleague to colleague. And so one of the things that I will be doing on the Ithaca campus, my apologies, is, and I could make these hybrid meetings so that everyone can attend, but I was going to start having conversations in May, five by discipline. And so the people who are working in the humanities, what are the pressures for them versus somebody who's in the life sciences? And so please be on the lookout. And it's not even just pressures. Are there ways for us to show generosity to each other, build community for each other? I know the provost is also looking for really tangible, concrete things that the faculty can contribute to help the institution as well. So it's really about how do we help each other, and also how do we help Cornell, because helping Cornell helps us, to be honest.
So one thing that's very confusing to me right now. Oh, sorry. Larry Smart, professor in horticulture. I'm a plant breeder. So one thing that's very confusing to me, this is an essential part for many of us of our extension programs, is social media platforms. So I, at one point, became very active on Twitter. Now I don't use Twitter at all. I'm not convinced that it's reaching my stakeholders or my audience. I've never had a presence on Facebook. I haven't opened a Blue Sky account. I'm not sure if we're supposed to be using TikTok or not, but I know my daughter uses TikTok all the time. It's just very confusing to me. And it's one thing I think I would love to get advice back from my communication colleagues or from Faculty Senate. You know, this is our recommended platform, or, you know, at least some perspective on if this is the stakeholder group you want to reach, use this platform versus this platform. Don't use that platform because you're going to get your hand slapped on that platform. It's probably not a good idea. So that's something I would love to get some more organizational advice back on what and we should be doing.
I will be sharing. So I have a listserv, deans, directors, and what's the other D? There's another D. I think it's departmental chairs. But the academic leadership of the university, I will share everything that is contributed here through the Qualtrics, which I'll send out again. I'll be sharing all of the feedback from the faculty and the ideas that come from the faculty with them, so that they can start planning and building resources such as that. Yeah.
I'm just bringing this up from a general public perspective. Sorry, Susan Brown, a horticulture plant breeder. When I talk to family or some of the staff here, everybody is suspicious that Cornell has such a good endowment, why don't they just cover it? Or USDA got rid of a bunch of people, but they hired them all back, which we know is not the case. But even hearing the provost talk about, we don't have a good handle on how many foreign students have lost their visa because we don't hear it directly. They have to self-report. So there's a lot of bad assumptions out there in the general public. And I think if someone good in communication could explain why the endowment is not as fluid, because you have Harvard that said, we cashed in some money. Well, if they can do it, why can't Cornell? And so I think that, especially for our industry, so we're gonna rely more on commodity funds from our apple, grape, vegetable industry if we can, but they're hurting. They're in a worse economic situation than they've ever been. So, for example, we had a grant meeting, and the growers came in and they said, no coffee. And I said, you're lucky you're getting lunch. But that's, you know, they said, we've given over $1 million. Those kind of upfront messages to them that, you know, yes, USDA positions have been lost. Yes, there is not as much ability to play with the endowment. This is where we stand. As you said, saying we're really appreciative of your funding and we need it now more than ever. But where do we get that information and how do we make it so that we're not speaking out of turn, but that we have a unified voice that this is the situation, and yes, I understand that endowment looks like it's fluid, but it's not.
Hi, this is Katie Gold, Assistant Professor of Grape Pathology again. I just want to return to a topic about the international community, just to speak on behalf of or express concern on behalf of our colleagues, faculty colleagues who are international and here on visas and not necessarily green cards. There's been a concern, rightfully, and I'm glad, has been expressed about our students who are having their F1 visas canceled and their SEVIS records deleted. But I also wanted to express concern for our faculty colleagues who are here on visas as well, because, you know, if the government is going to cancel F1 visas, what's to stop them from canceling all H1Bs as well, especially, you know, or changing the rules about academic H1Bs, and especially to expressing concern for our colleagues who are pre-tenure and international as well, who are devoting those like exciting early career years to an institution. And I would say I would be very heartened to see a commitment of support from Cornell to supporting their faculty if something like that were to happen. And I understand, you know, perhaps you don't want to say anything and inspire any ideas, but just showing a commitment to support our colleagues and provide resources and not just abandon them.
Gong, did you want to say something?
Yes. Okay. This is Peidong. Oh, let me see my. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, thank you. This is Peidong. I'm from the senator from the history department. First, thanks everyone for being here together, especially in this time, in a time like this. We all know we are all dealing with pressures in our own ways, just like so many colleagues already mentioned that. Just a small thing that might help someone. My house is a very short walk from Central Campus. I don't drive and I don't have a car. But somehow I ended up with a very long driveway. So it can fit two cars, maybe three cars. On a good day, if anyone is looking for a place to park nearby and don't mind a little walk, you are welcome to get in touch. No promise, but it's there, the driveway. Thank you.
Thank you.
computer. One idea that I've heard is that in every single county, CCE has an annual meeting. And should we be inviting leadership to go to as many of those as possible? The deans, the vice provost, provost, president. I don't know if you guys have any ideas of what those annual meetings look like, but I just feel like this is an opportunity for really Cornell's palpable impact, local impact.
Yeah, I think it would be important to work with Andy Turner, the director of Cooperative Extension. And so I don't know myself. So I have the Ontario County Cooperative Extension has their meetings here. So I have been able to address them many times. And that's really nice. I'm confident that folks in Long Island, Claral, and Hudson Valley have done the same. For those county meetings, I don't know if it would be appropriate, but there are meetings on the Ithaca campus where all of the executive directors from all of the counties come to campus. Frequently, it coincides with a celebration of the Cornell Cooperative Extension internships, and each of the interns gives a brief discussion of what they did over the summer, and I think that would be a perfect opportunity.
I love it. Thank you.
Hi, can you hear me? Yeah. This is Yu Jiang, assistant professor from horticulture. I'm an ag engineer. So I think I just want to follow up for the past two topics. One is how we can, you know, better connect within the state, but also how to better connect with the international groups. I'm not really that pessimistic, so I want to bring some of the opportunities, right, for Cornell as a university, really global-wise, to show our impact is how to leverage our existing network within the state and also our international learning hubs. Well, there were some discussion before, and I made some comment. I disagree with some of the statement some of the, you know, senators shared. But I think it is the critical time for Cornell as a university to think about what's our strategy to be the leading institution worldwide. And at the same time, how we can connect all these intellectual contributions around the world, bring back to New York State, better fulfill our mission here. Because I feel like every single day there is a new ag technology somewhere in the Europe, in Australia, New Zealand. And it's really hard to bring all of them to New York because of many of the political, you know, barriers. So I really wish, you know, Cornell could be the leading institution, really show that's an example from Cornell, and we're going to just work together collectively to fulfill the state, but bring back to the, you know, international community, but also learn from the international community, bring back to New York.
You are speaking Vice Provost Wendy Wolford's language. So yesterday in an academic leadership meeting, that's what she talked about, the global impact of Cornell, but also how to take, one, that reciprocity, but also to really make clear to New Yorkers and to the domestic audience how the work that's happening in these other countries around the world have direct impact on their lives here. So definitely the provost and the vice provost of international affairs. We're just speaking about that yesterday. If people have ideas of how to make that happen, right now they're thinking about through the global hubs, but there might be other opportunities too that you know of, and please share them. And anything that you contribute to me will be passed along to the appropriate stakeholder. So even if you didn't speak today or you just didn't have an idea today that you wanted to share, just know that there's an open forum. Just email me. We can Zoom, whatever you would like. I'm here to support you, but also share resources with you, but also to share out your messages to the appropriate stakeholders.
Yeah, to Eve's point, actually, in her presentation, Wendy Wolford, who's the Vice Provost for International Affairs, spoke, and in fact, I was thinking about you because you had mentioned this when we had that conversation about with the SIPS faculty, and it's been in my head this whole time. And so when she said this, I was like, oh, that's the connection we need to make. And And she did send out an email message, I believe it was a week ago, and it came in on a Saturday. And she apologized sort of for it coming in on a Saturday, but just said, hey, at least it didn't come in on Friday. But the idea was that because so much stuff happens on Fridays with the executive orders that it's kind of a chaos time. But in that email, which I have to admit, I didn't see come across my email, so I'm sure many have missed it as well. This would be another thing. Like if you didn't get that email that I'm about to like reach out and we'll try to make sure you get it. We will make sure you get it. But it was asking Cornell researchers to elaborate on projects that they've done in collaborations that they could immediately get sound bites from and publish as stories. And those stories have started to populate the research pages to get this idea out that we are a global university, that we have global collaborations. And I don't think the general public is actually going to our research pages, but if they were right now, they would see these stories. And that shift has happened in the last week to try to change the perspective and the PR of what we are as a university. And so your stories would be perfect for that, and please send them along because they are then pairing faculty with the right development folk or whoever to make those stories happen.
Anyone online who wants to just contribute one last thought before we adjourn? So, Phil.
Phil Nicholson, Astronomy Department in College of Arts and Sciences. So, just in the vein of things that we can do to help a little bit on a small scale with individual people. And something that I just encountered recently is I have a foreign student at the moment who's been working with me, who's graduating this year, has been trying to get into a US graduate school, but to no big surprise, he did not get any offers this year, as did many of our other domestic students as well. I have money in a grant that still hasn't been frozen or anything yet, and I would be happy to continue paying him to work over the summer if he could stay at Cornell. But at the moment, when we tried that, we just ran into the rule. It says, oh, he's finished all of his classes. He's officially graduated. He hasn't yet, but he will be next month. So we can't hire him as a student anymore over the summer. He becomes a regular person. There may be a bunch of small things like that where I don't think this is a federal visa issue. I think he has a visa that lets him stay for another year. I think these are just internal Cornell rules that maybe some thought could be given to easing up on some of these rules that are probably there for a good historical reason, like to stop people just hanging around hiring cheap employees for the summer. But in this case, when there's a lot of people maybe looking for jobs and where there is some money available, hiring a student for the summer is a lot cheaper than hiring one for a whole year, for example. So if there's opportunities to suggest to some of the powers that be in the administration that maybe now is a good time to ease up on some of those, especially rules that permit us to hire students in ways that we can't at the moment.
We'll certainly share that. That is likely an HR issue, so I will share that with the Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer for sure. And thank you all for hosting us today. It's lovely to be here. The weather was clearly on our side. It's gorgeous. And thank you for your hospitality, and also just to be in community with you has been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. Great. You are, you know, it's one day they don't see.